Welcome to the 4 o'clock show, Voices from the Frontline segment on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. This is Manuel Criollo with my co-host Eric Mann. On today's show, we'll begin the show first off with Eric Mann and his weekly dispatch. Today it's going to be about Medgar Evers. Second week from Miami, we'll have Larice Godin of VEJAIJO, a Haitian human rights organization in Miami, Florida, and the work that this organization is doing in Miami to assure the vote for Haitians and their work to defeat George W. Bush. Third, we'll have Damon Azali and Norma Henry, live from Miami, who are part of a four-member delegation from the Strategy Center and the Bus Riders Union to assure the democratic rights of blacks, Haitians, and Latinos in Miami. They're doing voter protection work in collaboration with the Miami Worker Center. And lastly, we'll have Keith Jennings from Count Every Vote. He's going to be talking about this organization's work in the Black Belt South to assure black voters' democratic right to be respected and free of intimidation. So stay tuned. We'll be back with Eric Mann.
Hey everybody, happy day before the election or coronation or coup d'etat or whatever. This is Eric Mann, and we're going to start out the show. Most of today's show is going to be about the grassroots efforts in Miami to secure the vote. But I've been opening up the last couple of shows with a commentary, and I want to do a brief one about how 60 Minutes butchered the commentaries about Emmett Till, the young black man who was killed in 1955. In 1955, you know, they ask you, where were you when Kennedy died in 1963, which I remember. But where were you when Emmett Till died in 1955? I was 14 years old, just like him. So this was about a young, hip, black kid from Chicago, I believe, who went down to Mississippi and who, quote, didn't know his place. His Mississippi friends took him into a store run by the Bryants. As he walked out, he allegedly whistled in the direction of Carolyn Bryant and then went home, and for two or three days they lived in terror, knowing that there was going to be some retaliation. 3 days later, two white men came to his house. It was Bryant and his half-brother J.W. Milam, who were looking for Till in the midnight of the night and found him and his cousins at the home of Reverend Mose Wright, Till's granduncle. Till and Simon, Wright's son, were asleep together in one room. Parker was in another room, and he was awakened by the sounds of angry voices. This is all from the 60 Minutes text. Fear was gripping me because in my heart I said, I'm really ready to die, and at 16 I wasn't ready to die. I could just feel like the whole bed was shaking, recalls Parker, one of the other black youth in the room. In these guys come with the pistol in one hand, the flashlight in the other. For some reason I closed my eyes and I opened them, and they just passed on by. I went to the next room. I woke up and looked, and I saw the two men standing over the bed. One had a gun, which was J.W. Milam. I saw Roy Bryant. They ordered me to lay back down and go back to sleep. They ordered Emma to get up and put his clothes on, and my mother was pleading and begging with him not to take him, says Simon. My dad was pleading with him, and my mother then at that time offered them some money to leave Emmett alone. Roy Bryant kind of hesitated, but then Milam, he didn't hesitate at all. He didn't even think about taking money. He came there to take Emmett, and that's what he proceeded to do. So they took the young man out of the house. And afterwards, imagine this black family sitting around. A sadness came over the whole house. You could cut the grief in the house with a knife. Because after they left, no one said anything hardly. All I could hear my dad was saying, mm-mm-mm. August 31st, 1955, 3 days after being abducted, Till's mangled body was found by a boy fishing in the Tallahatchie River. Not far from money, a 75-pound fan from a cotton gin was attached to his neck by barbed wire. He had been badly tortured, an eye was detached, an ear cut off, appeared to be shot in the head. But Emmett's mother, Mamie, battled with Mississippi authorities. She was up in Chicago and was able to have her son's body returned to Chicago so she could identify him before she buried him. Mamie Till was determined never to let anyone forget the brutal way in which her son was murdered. You got to picture this is 1955 in the heart of Deep South racism. I looked at the bridge of his nose and it looked like someone had taken a meat chopper and chopped it. And I looked at his teeth because I had so much pride in his teeth. His teeth were the prettiest things I'd ever seen in my life, I thought, and only saw two. Well, where are the rest of them? They had been knocked out, and I was looking at his ears, and that's when I discovered a hole about here, and I could see daylight on the other side. Now, that was it necessary to shoot him? 50,000 people came to his funeral, which is amazing at that time, in Chicago. Mamie Till kept the fight open and allowed a shocking photograph of Till to be published in Jet magazine, seen across the country. A black man, another black man, Willie Reed, stood up and said that he did see it, and that he saw two white men, Bryant and Milam, with two other white men, and two black men who worked for Milam. He testified in court, that is, Willie Reed did. He went back to Chicago and had a nervous breakdown, where he suffered a nervous breakdown and was hospitalized. All right, the case of Emmett Till, if you've been back at that period, was a tremendous turning point, even more than maybe, more than anything, more than Medgar Evers, more than even Goodman, Cheney, and Schwerner. This was torture, this was murder, and this was just saying that a young black kid could not even look at a white woman in the South without being tortured. The white guys, Milam and Bryant, were found not guilty, of course, by an all-white jury that laughed at the case. And then, because they couldn't be tried under double jeopardy, they sold their story to Look magazine for $4,000 and boasted how they killed and tortured him. So far, so good, you could say. So far, everybody in the civil rights movement was outraged. This led and contributed to the Montgomery bus boycott. It contributed to a whole generation being radicalized by the racism of Southern justice. But now 60 Minutes got to get in the act, and Ed Bradley got to get in the act. And Ed Bradley, frankly, working for such an establishment operation, tries to be like, you know, a black reporter getting down about a civil rights case. But I want to talk about how 60 Minutes worked to kill this story and mess up the story. The first thing they do is they find a young man named Keith Beauchamp, who is an amateur filmmaker from Louisiana, a good kid, who's trying to stir up reinterest in the case. But here's the problem. The two white defendants who killed Emmett, are dead. So now, who are you going to go investigate? It turns out that they're going to investigate blacks and whites who were involved in this. And this is a terrible thing for a young, naive man like Beauchamp to be doing, because among his discoveries was Henry Lee Loggins, now 81, living in Ohio. At the time of the murder, Loggins was working for Milam. FBI files from 1955 refer to witnesses who claim they saw Loggins on the truck with Till until after he was abducted. So then you have this scene, you know, the classic 60-minute scene. Ed Bradley shows up in this poor, like, southern sharecropper's house in Ohio, 81-year-old man who's been living through the hell of this, his whole life, and he comes up to me and goes, did you deny the allegations that you killed Emmett Till? He said, I wouldn't sit here and tell a lie. I wasn't with them peoples. I saw nothing, said Loggins, who's there that he would tell the FBI the same thing. But you watch Bradley intimidating, using the 60 Minutes camera against a black man, with the goal of what? As Charles Schumer, the senator from New York, says, whoever was involved in the Emmett Till case must be prosecuted. Now, Beauchamp, to give him credit, says, we believe that they were forced to participate in the crime. It was going to either be them or Emmett Till. It was shocking at first because for so long you've heard, you know, white men were involved. And then that was it. It was a white and black thing. You couldn't help but, you know, be amazed. So they take this confused black filmmaker who's saying that now he's confused that it's black and white people. Well, what is there to be confused about? In 1955, black people lived under literal slavery in the South. In 1955, a young man was brought out of his house, and the black family, what did they do for 3 days? They stayed in the house and prayed, knowing the probability of the kid was going to get killed, because otherwise they would go out and get killed. Why did somebody testify, a black man testify for him, and then have to go to Chicago and have a nervous breakdown? So the film could have been about how the only people that we want to prosecute are white people. That any black people that were involved who worked for Milam clearly should be absolved because they were essentially operating with a gun to their head. They should be getting mental health. They should even be getting government benefits. But instead, they do a thing where they go after Carolyn Milam, who is the wife, the living wife of one of the guys who killed her. And now it looks like they're going to go after Carolyn Milam and about 4 black people. So they keep going and say, Till's cousin Simon said, my dad said, there was another man standing on the porch. My dad talked about it. There was another person in the truck because when they marched Emmett out to the truck and they asked the person inside the truck, is this the one? My dad said he heard a woman's voice identifying Emmett as the boy that did the whistling. Today, 60 Minutes has learned that Carolyn is a focus of the Justice Department. That's fine, but they also know that about 8 more people are going to be prosecuted. Well, that finally may bring a measure of justice to the family of Emmett Till, it also brings back the pain after 50 years. My point, a black reporter, Ed Bradley, and a black filmmaker named Beauchamp should not be participating in a lynch mob, against black men who were prisoners, who were forced to participate if a black man did put that 50-foot fan, that 50-pound fan on Emmett's neck, knowing there was a gun to his head and he would be blown up. This is part of national oppression. The fact that Fannie Lou Hamer, who was a very well-known civil rights leader, was beat up by a black man under the orders of a white man, this is what was being done in the South. So if you're appalled, we have to demand no black people are prosecuted under the Emmett Till reopening. We only want the white perpetrators of the crime, not the blacks who also had a crime done to them. You can call CBS at 212-975-3247. Tell Ed Bradley he's in over his depth. He mainly doesn't get a chance to do civil rights cases, and when he does, he carries it out in the bungling, lousy politics of 60 Minutes, where if we don't get him off the case, it's going to be black people who could have been killed that night who may be prosecuted by white Chuck Schumer and by 60 Minutes. 60 Minutes is no friend of the liberal or the progressive movement. Put it on 212-975-3247. Tell them it's sloppy journalism, it's racist journalism, and even with a black lead anchor, it was a racist trick on the memory of Emmett Till.